Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater, program 215 in the series. This is September 16th, 2017, and to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good
How are
to
you?
See you.
Thank you.
All
you
right.
too.
In the booth, we have Shantae Garth, our producer. And tonight, we have some great classic radio shows all the way to 2 a.m. We're going to start things off with Crime Classics, a true crime case as heard in 1954. Then it's Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, a good comedy, and then a detective adventure of Dragnet, starring Jack Webb. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the new horror film Mother, about a couple whose relationship is tested when uninvited guests arrive at their home.
That sounds good.
Oh, it's supposed to be very
good.
Yeah,
you know, I saw the trailer for this movie.
Me too.
Looked really good. All right.
Yep.
What do they win?
They're going to win a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25.
Ah, that sounds good.
Doesn't it?
The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played Catwoman.
You're the second man who killed me this week, but I've got 7 lives left.
All right, who is that great actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
And we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
You're the second man who killed me this week, but I've got 7 lives left.
Brian, how are you?
I'm great.
Good.
How are you, Lisa?
We're great. We're great. Carl's great. I speak for him as well. I'm great. Carl's great. You're great. Everybody's great. Tell me who that fine actress is.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer is exactly right. And we are so happy to give you Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. It is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza and my very favorite deep dish pizza, which is very important. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnatis.com. Thank you so much for calling in. We're so happy that you're listening in tonight.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks,
care, Brian.
All right, you know what? Before we tune into Crime Classics, I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a text-in line. We love hearing from our listeners. The text-in line is 312-981-7200. That's how you can get a hold of us. We do read all of the texts. We try to get back to as many as we possibly can. I should say Lisa does, because she is, you have like two of the fastest thumbs I've ever seen.
I don't use my thumbs. You're very observant.
That's
though.
How fast they are. I can't
you
see
can't
them.
Can't even see them.
Yeah. And then also we have a Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater. You will see some great pictures that we're posting. In fact, there's a picture up of Lou Merrill, the star of Crime Classics. Then you'll see Eve Arden and Jack Webb, because those are our shows tonight.
And I actually already have a picture of Eve Arden up with the fun fact.
Oh, right.
So you can check that out. That's interesting, and we want you to read that. I think you'll appreciate that.
We always put a fun fact up there as well, so check it out. All right, but it's time now for Crime Classics. This was a docudrama that came to CBS Radio in 1953. It only lasted one season for some reason. I'm not sure why, because it was such a great show. It was created, produced, and directed by Elliot Lewis, and these were true crime cases. They examined crimes and murders throughout history, and it was a terrific show. Lou Merrill was the host. He played Thomas Highland, and the series featured radio's finest supporting players. This particular episode is called The Incredible History of John Shepard, and it does star Lou Merrill as Thomas Highland. Let's go back now to February 3rd, 1954, for part one of Crime Classics.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland,
with another true story of crime. Listen. The lady's name is Maria, and she's just come home from a party, dressed to kill. She's come home to discover a robber, the famous John Shepherd, who removes Maria's lavalier, gently, her earrings, slowly, and her rings. She was face to face with John Shepherd, and for the rest of her life, she'd have something to talk about. Tonight, my report to you on the incredible history of John Shepherd.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Hyland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Hyland.
The English king who was on the throne in 1722 was remarkable in that he could speak no English. Not that he was an idiot. He was a German, and he could speak German very well. As a matter of fact, he'd brought two young and ravishing ladies from Germany with him so that he could have someone to talk with, lonely monarch that he was. His name was George Louis, and his reign was stormy with that trouble with the Jacobites. This unpleasantness, you will recall, was settled by the Duke of Argyle, a soldier and dandy, husband to Anne the Knitter. And into these times strode John Shepherd. Well, he didn't stride exactly. He usually sneaked in through the back window, so as to rob. And one night in April, he got caught.
Light the taper in the candlestick, Maria, and we'll see who we have here. And you, sir. Don't move, or surely this blunderbuss I'm holding will...
I shall
will...
not move.
Husband?
Hold the candlestick up to him, and we'll see.
Oh! Ooh. Who you have here, madam, is John Shepherd.
John Shepherd be you. Well now, sir, you're caught. No more sneaking in and robbing for you, sir. And no more wives of respectable husbands will you make play with.
John Shepherd.
Come away from him, Marie.
He's only a boy.
Marie.
Downy cheek youth.
Come to rob.
No. I shall tell you why I've come here.
Do.
I had heard it spoken about, madam, of you.
Of me.
Maria, come away. Stand aside.
Gently, gently, husband. And you were saying what, John?
And I sought you out. Unbeknownst to you, I have sought you out and have followed you. Once, in a crowded place, I touched, gently, like this.
And this thrilled you, so you've come here to rob us out of house and home?
No, to find milady's boudoir.
Now you can talk as much as you wish, youth. For as soon as you are done with the talk, this trigger gets pulled. And from Cheapside to the Thames, London husbands all about will raise a hurrah in my name.
Boudoir, John.
To drown myself in the scent of yourself you have left behind.
Husband?
Yes?
Come over here a moment. Look at the candlestick, husband.
What of it?
Now, you were saying, John...
Beautiful. Gossamer hair. And lips of coral buds.
Lips.
But soft. As soft can ever be.
If you're a girl, go quickly.
And the jewels sparkle at your throat. And when you move your hand, it makes a pattern of glitter on the gentle air.
Take them.
Yes. what?
Lady Wedline says, about you, she says.
Did she? Now, hush.
Yes.
On this night, he was barely 20. His father died from drink when he was 3, and he was left orphaned when his mother died a year later. When he was 10, his aunt hired him out to a cane chair maker, but the trade bored him and he ran away. Alone in London, he began to pursue the libertine life and was soon adept at picking pockets, mugging, breaking into houses, bribing policemen, and joshing the ladies. He was a handsome boy, and even at 16 was caught up in a scandal involving Madame Scott's school, causing it to lose its charter for 3 decades. And once, at 19, according to a footnote, His activities all but caused Admiral Brisbane to bring the fleet in from Skagerrak to scotch a rumor. Romantic, dashing, and bold. But he had his home life, too.
Scallionate billaging.
Now, Beth.
Pretty boy, where have you been, pretty boy?
You know well.
Would I mouth the question if I knew it well? Where have you been?
About?
Stealing?
Well, of course, stealing.
Then show me. Show me why I've been waiting to the wee hours.
Nothing to show you, Beth.
Oh?
On coming home to you, I met a man.
And he said, what you got to sell, John boy? What you got to sell?
Just some baubles.
And he cheated you for what they were worth, and you gambled, and now you got nothing.
I saved you something, dear Beth.
What?
Here's a bauble for you.
A piece of glass you bought at a store for half a mite.
Here, let me put it to your lowly throat.
No.
Beth, pretty kin.
A thing to tell you, John, because I've sworn it to me. Beth Lyon, I swore to me. Any more talking amongst the maids in the market I hear, any more soft laughing I hear in John Shepherd's name with it to the police I'll go to. I swore it. I swore it. Because I'm tired of waiting into the wee hours for you and you coming home and tired and cheated, gambled out. Now I want none of you no more, John.
You come to me and you'll change your mind, Beth Lyon.
All right. We'll see. Now what, John Shepherd?
Oh, soft touches your hair against my cheek. And a sparkle go.
Get out of here.
Beth.
What?
You said a thing about the police.
Get out of here.
The cell's not especially clean, John Laddie. But it's never been broke out of. A bite of you. Wife. Woman. There's a new one in the little cell. Spoon a pot of gruel and take it into him. And not so generous neither. There's only a mite to feed them each day, and most of them will hang anyhow. So why fat the likes of them? That's enough. Now, that's enough. You take it, time.
Hello? Oh. Hello. Oh, what? Dream is this? What angel is this that brings me sustenance? Here, I'll take it from your softly hands. Why stare at me with soft doe eyes? I'm but John Shepherd. And why widen go your eyes? You cannot know me, for I am nothing. And this is a dream anyhow, and does not happen in reality. And how am I sure of it? For no cheek was so rosy and warm beneath my lips. And if those dainty hands were to hold a key now. Yes, just so. Oh, dream, wake me not. But let the loving fingers turn key in lock while lip presses lip. Madam, no, speak not, but walk with me. And show which way. How do I get to the street, madam?
Without even paying a fine. As a matter of fact, there is on permanent exhibition at Scotland Yard a locket which the warden's wife gave to John Shepherd as a memento of their walk from cell to street. A simple, small locket with a simple, small diamond in the center of it. It is said that John Shepherd cherished the locket for a week before he sold it to a pawnbroker. And so he was on the loose again, stealing, robbing, chucking chins, steering clear of Beth Lyon and the police, gambling, and doing all the things which made him a legend. And one day, it was a summer's day, and he was strolling in the fabulous Chesney Lane and eyeing the nice things behind the shop windows, and he stopped for a moment and considered a diamond brooch and wondered where the closest rock was when...
Don't do it, John. Don't do it, lad.
Huh?
I know what you're thinking, John. How to get a rock? To hand to smash a window, to steal what you see there.
Why you got your hand on my shoulder?
Because I'm of the Lord, John, lad.
And I'm arrested, then?
You be John Shepherd, ain't you?
Am I arrested, then?
We was told to look out for you, especially here in Chesney Lane. Don't you run, John, lad.
Then what you want from me?
I've heard you're a sly one, and a nervy one, too.
And there's a thing on your mind you're not saying.
Aye.
Which is what?
It's my duty to walk up and down Chesney Lane and to keep the law and to take note of things.
And you've noted
down
what?
There, across the street, two blocks down, at the corner.
The Greystone House?
Aye.
The house of Lord Courtliffe and his lady?
Aye.
What of it?
'Tis empty. Of the lord and the lady, that is.
The servants?
Gone. All of them gone to watering in Brighton.
Dee-dee now.
Dee-dee. As I am the Lord, Dee-dee. As my name is Cooper, Dee-dee.
Let us walk.
Dee-dee.
Later that day, an advertisement was inserted in the London Times that the furniture and belongings of Lord and Lady Courtliffe were on sale on the premises, in their natural surroundings. The house was thrown open to the public, and it was a marvelous sale. The floorwalker's name was John Shepherd. He also took the money. Listening to Crime Classics, and your host, Thomas Hyland.
All right, that's the first portion of Crime Classics with the incredible history of John Shepherd from 1954. We'll have more after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back. We are here till 2 a.m. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night, playing your favorite classic radio shows here on the WGN Radio Theater. Our text in line, 312-981-7200. Feel free to text us. If you have any questions about the show, want to request a certain classic radio show, we'll be happy to play it for you. All right, now it's time for the conclusion to Crime Classics.
And now once again, Thomas Hyland and the second act of Crime Classics, and his report to you on the incredible history of John Shepherd. I would like to speak to you briefly about Newgate Prison. And Newgate Prison because, as you must know, John Shepherd must eventually come here, since, as all of us know too, Lex Omnia Vincit. Well, Newgate Prison was built in the 12th century and was originally the gatehouse to the west side of London. Gatehouse, many gay times were had here, travelers being what they are. But in the 15th century, iron bars were imported from Sheffield, and as a prison, Newgate came into its own. The Great Fire of 1666 destroyed it, but from the ashes rose a dungeon even more formidable than its predecessor. In 1723, the year which concerns us here, Newgate was a place of dampness and stone and iron, with a special section for shackle and rack. You might be interested in knowing that the most popular method of execution in this era was pressing a fellow to death. More later. In the meanwhile, back to Chesney Lane and the house of Lord and Lady Courtliffe. Toward the end of a highly successful sale in which the Greystone house was being stripped to its stone.
I beg your pardon.
Yes?
Are the tapestries for sale, too?
Oh, yes.
And at what price?
Which tapestry did you have in mind?
Well, let me see. This one.
Ah, excellent choice.
I like unicorn.
£10.
You'll give me a bill of sale?
Why should I?
To prove that I have come by this honestly.
After all what?
This is a famous tapestry.
Dee Dee.
The Farandole of the Unicorns.
Oh, Dee Dee.
Lord Courtliff's favorite.
I know, he told me.
As he told me.
A good friend of his?
He has many friends. In the police.
And you're...
Captain Cleaver.
I'm...
John Shepherd. Only John Shepherd would have the imagination, the audacity to open up a stranger's house and sell all the stranger's belongings.
Captain.
Yes, lad.
There's an arrangement I have with an Officer Cooper of the police.
Pity.
Why pity?
Now, Officer Cooper will be hung, too.
Oh. Then...
Of it, there's no doubt. You're on...
Wait.
What?
The proceeds from the sale of the furnishings on the second floor.
What of them, lad?
Yours.
My name is not Cooper. Come along, lad, John, lad. You're under arrest. I'll test that stonemason. Tight. Good. You're a staple to the stone floor, right enough, John Ladd. You'll not get out of here. Now, stonemason, for an extra safety, a U spike about his neck onto the floor. Now, let me see. A couple more hits, stonemason. A couple more, my man. The only time you'll be leaving Newgate, lad, John Ladd, is when they trundle your body out. And we'll take another extra safety. Hand me those chains, stonemason. Wrap them round you, lad, John Ladd. Goodbye, lad. Come, stonemason.
I have here a newspaper of the time from which I'd like to read a paragraph or two. John Shepherd, alone in the stone room of Newgate Prison, espied a crooked nail. With this device, he unburdened himself of his chains. Some have said that John Shepherd enlisted outside aid in loosening himself from the stapling, but John Shepherd has claimed that this is not so. But it remains true that unstapled he became. Whereupon he removed two stones from the wall of the room, which gave him access to a passageway between the walls. Thus, he climbed to the Red Room, so-called for obvious and horrible reasons. He threw down the door of this unspeakable closet, and thence came to the chapel. Removing a spike from the door of the chapel, he experienced small difficulty in opening four other doors, which led him to the roof. It was a rainy night, and he almost, in traversing this place, slipped to his doom. However, he jumped across a narrow alleyway onto the roof of a Mr. Finchley who lived next door and opened a window casement of this house.
Don't be frightened.
Where did you come from?
From out there, from the rain.
Oh.
You have no need to be frightened.
Well, who are you?
John Shepherd.
True.
Such is my misfortune.
Misfortune?
Yes.
How?
I say my name and I am shunned by all.
My father...
Don't scream for him. Just let me walk through that door and out of here.
My father...
I know, a wrathful man.
My father is in the country.
I know, in the next room.
In the country.
What?
In the country. I've been trying to tell you.
Oh, what wicked man is he to leave you here all alone? To leave you at the mercy of whoever comes across your roof... And into your window.
Oh, he needed to go. A matter of his health.
What is your name?
Angela.
I knew it, and I dared not speak it. Angela of Angels.
Oh, John.
Yes?
Your clothes, they're wet, and you...
Oh, cold. Shivery.
In the next room, there's a fire.
Take me to it.
Oh, take my hand, John.
Of Angels, take me to it.
And in no time at all, John Shepherd had the run of the house. He particularly liked the library and would spend hours here. He liked to read to Angela. And as your almanac will show you, this was a very rainy summer. So he read to her a lot. And in spite of the inclement weather, it was truly an idyllic summer for these two young people.
I love you, Angela.
Oh, and I love you, John. John, oh, John, John.
And small lovers spat.
I hate you.
Hate me, do you? Well, I despise you.
Partings. Greetings.
Oh, John, oh, John, John, he's come back.
And John would read to her again. And sometimes, next door, there would be an execution. And they would watch. And every week, Angela wrote to her daddy.
Dear Papa, it rains here. Most every day it rains. And there is chill in the air. I thank the stars each night that you're in the country and getting your strength back again. Stay as long as you want, and I will come down and visit you at Christmas time. As you have told me to, I improve myself in the library, reading and doing sums and musing. Tonight there is a thunder shower. How fortunate are you that you are not here. John, I'm writing to my father.
Hurry, then.
Your loving daughter, Angela.
In the autumn, the weather got better, and one morning in early October, right outside Angela's house when John was returning from the greengrocer's, a voice from out of the past all but dropped John like a pulled steer.
John, John, well, John Shepherd. Hello, John.
Hello, Beth.
Ain't they hanged you yet, John? Or pressed you?
I'm a hurry, Beth.
Be you now, please.
Yes, hush.
Now, why should I, John?
Because we're old friends, Beth.
Be we now. John?
Yes?
Were the police to find you, my lad, what would happen to you?
Well,
They'd hang you, wouldn't they? A pressure thinner than a comedy cake.
But you won't call them now, would you?
I might.
Unless what?
Like it was in the old times. Like it was before...
John!
Well, now.
You have the parsnips from the greengrocer's?
Well, now.
Who's this woman, John?
It's my
Forgot my name, John. I'm Beth Lyon, and who be you, little duck?
Come into the house, John.
Pretty as you please. Well, John ain't coming into your house no more. Are you, John?
Angela.
Yes, John?
Angela.
Now, you listen to me. You listen to me, John. I know where you came from that night. That first night when you came in from the roof, out of the rain. You came from next door, from Newgat Prison.
Angela.
And if you don't come into the house this moment, I'll yell for the police.
And he comes with me, royal.
John? Police!
And when John moved toward Angela, you guessed it.
Police!
Well, as you can imagine, that brought the police. And John was arrested again and got his old room back again. He was stapled again and chained again. And the guard was placed on 24-hour vigil.
Hey, guard. Guard. Yeah, how would you like to...
And so he was brought to trial and found guilty of robbery and footpadism, and, as was the law of the time, sentenced to execution. Since this was the very autumn when pressing to death went out of fashion, John Shepherd was hanged. This last event took place on the 16th of November, 1724, in front of a mob made up chiefly of protesting but fascinated women, an estimated 200,000 in the audience. There were on record certain excerpts, statements from certain women who had known him.
He's so young and gentle. They need not hang him. Oh, poor lad, it'll be a terrible loss.
London will seem different without the like Sir John Shepherd. There'll be no one to love for no more.
Each time it rains, I'll keep looking at the window and remembering. Oh, sweet apparition, and he'll no longer appear. Sweet John Shepherd. Cruel John Shepherd. I scarce know whether I love you or hate you the more.
Scarce knew whether she loved or hated him the more. Which was about the consensus, from a goodly sampling. And just think, only 23 years old. In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. John Shepherd, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was adapted from themes of the period and conducted by Bernard Herrmann. And the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Alastair Duncan was heard as John Shepherd. Featured in the cast were Betty Harford, Ellen Morgan, D.J. Thompson, Ben Wright, Richard Peel, and Jerry Desmond. Bob Lamond speaking. And here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Rome, Italy, just a little bit before March 15th in 44 B.C. We will concern ourselves with a man and his friends, and what happened when they all got together in the same room. It's listed in my files as 23 Knives Against Caesar. Thank you. Good night.
Your Heart Association presents Bing Crosby.
Folks, you know, there's never been a job too big for America to handle. Right now, your Heart Association is asking you to join medical science in the fight against heart diseases, which take more lives than all other diseases combined. The goal of the Heart Fund is to help bring new hope to all hearts through new advances in surgery, through new methods of prevention and care and treatment. The American Heart Association and its affiliates comprise the only voluntary health agency devoted exclusively to heart programs. Mail your contribution to Heart, H-E-A-R-T, care of your local post office. Help your Heart Fund help your heart.
Lionel Barrymore's Radio Hall of Fame is great Sunday night drama on the CBS Radio Network.
That's Crime Classics, a broadcast from February 3rd, 1954, The Incredible History of John Shepherd, starring Lou Merrill as Thomas Highland. And hope you enjoy that as heard on the CBS Radio Network. And coming up in our next hour, it's Our Miss Brooks and Dragnet.
6978 Soul Food would like to remind listeners that readers are leaders and education in the home is every bit as important as in school. When we encourage our kids to read, we take a powerful step toward the future of our community. Help them understand that by saying yes to education and graduation, they say yes to life. That's from 6978 Soul Food, where service isn't just a courtesy, it's a commitment. For more information, call 773-237-6090. That's 773-237-6090 for 6978 Soul Food at 6978 West North Avenue in Chicago.
You should be a spokesperson for this swab.
I would like to try the
teeth,
power swab.
Because your teeth are, yeah, but it wouldn't work on you because your teeth are so white.
Yeah, I would.
They kind
of
blind me sometimes.
If they sent me power swabs, I would use them.
I wear sunglasses while I'm on the air here with you because those pearly whites are very shiny.
Good. That's
me.
A good thing.
Yeah.
Blinded by the light.
Blinded by
there we
the
go.
Light.
I knew I could take you down there.
And you
road.
Know what, Lisa?
We have our music competition tomorrow.
We do. Let's talk about that in a moment. Okay.
Okay, in a moment.
I just wanted to tell all of our listeners, you know, when I was a kid, in 1975, I heard my first classic radio show. Okay. I was 12 years old. I was sleeping over at my friend Vince Lombardi's house,
yes.
Not the football coach. And we were being rowdy, and his father was like, you know what? I have something that'll quiet these punks down. I will put on a classic radio show. He had like 8-track tapes and cassettes of classic radio shows. And he played an episode of Suspense, and it starred Cary Grant. It was called On a Country Road. Now, I know a lot of our listeners have heard that show because I played it a lot. Dave Plyer plays it. It's a very famous episode. But as a kid, 12 years old, hearing that show, I was absolutely riveted, okay, to the show. So here's what I've done. We have a new website that we put up where we have thousands and thousands of shows for our listeners to digitally download, okay? And they're all digitally remastered. Mike has done an amazing job. We're always adding more shows to this website. The website is classicradiostore.com. Just log on to classicradiostore.com. And this week, I thought it would be interesting to put that show up on the website and make it absolutely free to anyone that comes to the site to be able to download that half-hour show and hear the program that got me so interested and sort of enamored with these classic radio shows. So you can go to classicradiostore.com and digitally download. It's the very first show, you know, the very first show when you go there. It's a free program. It's Suspense. It's digitally remastered. The sound is amazing. And it's from 1950. Cary Grant stars in it. What a great show. You have to listen to it, Lisa. If you haven't
heard
the show,
of course
you've heard it. Okay, download the show, folks. You're going to love it. ClassicRadioStore.com.
And if you forget anything that Carl just said, we have that posted right on top of our Facebook page. It's pinned to the top. It's got the website and some other information, so you can check it out on our Facebook page as well.
Right, ClassicRadioStore.com. Check it out. All right, yeah, that's right. Now, we have picked out Roger, I, and you.
Roger, I,
Roger,
and you.
Roger, me, and you.
Me picked it out.
Me, I picked
Roger
it out
has,
of the
Carl
store.
Has, and I have. Roger, Carl, and I.
Yes, Roger.
Have all picked out our favorite songs from 1977.
And me, isn't it, and me?
No. Me right? have picked out. That's not correct.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
anyway,
you're the English master.
We all
master.
Have picked out our favorite
that's why,
songs.
That's why you have a master's degree in English.
That's not why.
Right?
That's just common
that's
sense.
Not why.
Yeah,
no. Yeah, so we've all chosen our favorite song. Is it 1977?
Seven.
Yeah,
right.
We're up to 77.
We've got, I have to say, this is the first.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
That's us, Lisa.
That's us.
Thanks,
Carl.
David. And yeah, we're here till 2 a.m. And in this hour, which is hour two, we have our Miss Brooks, Eve Arden, as Connie Brooks. Yes.
I have so many people that are so excited to hear our Miss Brooks. And then I get a couple of messages on Facebook going, what are you thinking playing comedies? So, you know, you can't win for trying,
we do,
guys.
We try to do everything here. We do Westerns, comedies, detective, mystery shows. Yeah, like we had a whole bunch of people saying, I didn't like that crime classics. And then we had just as many people saying, wow, that was such an interesting episode of crime classics.
And last weekend, we didn't play any comedies. And we had so many people who texted in angrily saying, where are the comedies? So tonight we play a comedy and they're texting going, what's with the comedy?
Here's the thing,
come
folks.
Come on, you guys.
We try to please everybody.
And
but
I like the comedy. So I'm not going to tell you that I don't. I do like the comedies.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's your like relaxation from you
what?
Know,
huh?
From life. Stress.
You know, I got here early today, right? So Lisa calls me on my way here.
You called me.
And did I call? No,
mm-hmm.
did I call
yeah.
you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, whatever. And she's like, will you wait for me in the parking lot? And I'm like,
that
I'm,
I did say.
I'm like here already, Lisa. I want to go in. She's like, no, wait for me in the parking lot and walk in with me. I said, okay. So I saw Steve Dale. Right? Steve Dale was coming out, you know?
Right,
and
from
and,
Steve
and so
Cut
I
worlds.
Start talking to Steve, and he says, and something like, I said, oh, I'm waiting for Lisa. I'm just waiting for her because I'm going to walk in with her. And she's like, oh, where do you guys live? I think Steve thought we were married.
Yeah, that's not the first time that's happened.
I mean, I know you wish you were married to
yeah,
me.
Always. Yeah, every day I go home and go, oh, I wish I was married
I
to
but
Carl
they,
Amari.
You know what, though? I got to say this. Dan's quite a catch.
Yes, I know
Dan
that.
Dan is quite the catch. So you did good, Lisa.
Thank you. I appreciate having your support on that.
But, you know, if Steve Dale, who works here at WGN, thinks you and I are married, our listeners must. A lot of our listeners must think that. Let's get the record straight.
Let's clear things
Lisa
up.
Lisa and I are not married.
Never going to happen.
We're just best friends.
Yes.
We are absolutely best friends. And a guy can have a girl as a best friend, right?
Well, here we are.
You can have a best friend as a guy.
And we absolutely do.
I am not married, and Lisa is married.
Right.
But she's married to
someone else.
Not me. She's married to Dan Wolf.
Yeah, so we're all clear now.
Who is my attorney. He's an awesome attorney, by the way.
Well, that's for certain.
If you need a good I'll tell you what, Dan keeps me out of all kinds of hot water.
Well, and you need that.
Dan's a great attorney, Dan Wolf.
So I'm your psychiatrist, and he's your attorney.
Schwartz, Wolf, and Bernstein, right?
Yeah.
Schwartz, Wolf, and Bernstein.
They're
in Buffalo Grove.
Yep, that's where the office
is. And I'm telling you, folks, I'm just telling you, great, great lawyers.
Well, thanks for the
plug. And they do everything there. I mean, they do divorce,
well,
they do criminal.
Well, there's a bunch of different lawyers.
All kinds of stuff, yeah.
They all do different things.
Tell you what, folks, if you're looking for a lawyer, that's where you want to go.
Message me.
All right, so in this hour, we have Our Miss Brooks, and it's all brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming biographical thriller Marshall about the first African-American Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Very cool.
And the winner is going to get two tickets to see MASH star Jamie Farr at the Mackinac Arts Center in Tuesdays with Maury. This show is on September 30th at the Mac.
All right. Very good. The number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's the hint. This actress, and yes, I would date her, played Penny Lane in Almost Famous.
We support the music. We inspire the music. We're here because of the music.
All right, who is that great actress? Call us, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
We support the music. We inspire the music. We're here because of the music.
Hi, Judith.
Hi,
how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good to hear from you. We're hoping that you can recognize that actress that Carl mentioned that he'd like to date.
It's Kate Hudson.
That's Kate Hudson. She really is a cutie, and she's very talented.
I love that. I love that movie. That's the only one I've ever known the answer to. So.
There you go. Well, we're glad you made it. We're glad you got through. And you have won two tickets to see MASH star Jamie Farr at the Mackinac Arts Center. It's in Tuesdays with Maury, which is the story that changed millions of lives. It's on September 30th. You can join the MAX season kickoff party before the show. For tickets, you can call 630-942-4000, but you just won two tickets. So we hope you enjoy that. That sounds like a lot of fun. Great.
So,
excellent.
Yeah,
bye, Judith.
Thanks, Judith. All right, it is time now for Our Miss Brooks, but one quick announcement about our contest, right, Lisa?
Yes, our music contest starts tonight, Sunday night at 11:05. You can start texting into the texting line. We've had quite a number of people who already started texting in. Wait, hold on to your ideas and start at 11:05
yeah,
tonight.
Yeah, none of the ones that came in will be counted. It starts at 11:05
I just said that.
Tonight.
Yeah. I said, did I not say it right?
I have a deeper voice.
Well, that's true.
You know, so
you should just say it again.
Maybe it permeates a little through the airwaves a little more. Like, don't text in.
Are you
saying music contest?
Because your voice is deeper, people listen to you and not me.
It's not as deep as David Jennings
or Roger Badish's,
but it's definitely deeper than yours.
So because it's deeper, people will listen to you and not me?
It's more authoritative.
I'm not trying to be authoritative.
Yeah. Like, don't text in
Look,
until
11:05. I'm the nice one around here. You're the troublemaker.
Yeah, you're real. Yeah, this is true.
This is true.
You're absolutely right. You are nice.
And you're troubled.
You're very nice.
And you're very
actually,
troubled.
Actually, Lisa, you know, in real life, Lisa is really, really
and
nice.
And you're very, very troubled.
Yeah, Lisa is a really nice person. You are, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
You know what? I mean, yeah, it's a testament to your parents. I've met both your parents. They're super nice people.
Oh, I have an edge.
And that's why. Well, I wasn't talking about that, but you are nice. All right, it's time for a nice radio show. Our Miss Brooks. Eve Arden stars as a 10th grade English teacher, Connie Brooks. Let's go back to March 5th, 1950 for Our Miss Brooks.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay.
and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, written by Al Lewis. Well, they say that March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. But Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, has an amendment to this ancient bromide.
Yes, this year, March and our beloved principal, Osgood Conklin, both came in like lions. And last Wednesday morning, when he summoned me to his office, I could tell by the tone of his roar that he had gotten up on the wrong side of his cage. As I entered his office, however, I was thrown off guard somewhat by his bluff and hearty manner. In fact, his first two words to me were replete with camaraderie and affection.
Sit down.
Yes, sir.
Miss Brooks, I arrived at school this morning 15 minutes ahead of anyone else, as is my wont.
It certainly is.
And as I... It certainly is what?
Your wont. That is, getting here 15 minutes ahead of anyone else is an old wont of yours. Yes, sir, that one wont goes way back. And after working for you for almost 5 years, I guess I know as much about your different wonts as any teacher in this
Hush!
Sorry, sir.
As I passed through the hall, I noticed one of the classroom doors was ajar. It was your room, Miss Brooks. And as I reached in to close the door, I saw your blackboards.
They hadn't been stolen.
No, no. But they hadn't been erased, either. You know very well, Miss Brooks, that it has long been a strict rule in this institution that nothing is to remain on the blackboards overnight.
Oh, I know that, sir, but some of the students must have made some notes after I left the room. You see, we've been studying the Shakespearean tragedies, and the class is taking to it with great enthusiasm.
Miss Brooks, I'm quite certain that the immortal bard did not pen the words I saw on your blackboard.
What words, Mr. Conklin?
One line said, and I quote, "Old man Conklin is a bird brain."
Oh, that's impossible, sir. You misread the blackboard. What it probably said was, "Old King Lear is a bird brain."
Old King Lear is a bird brain? Who would want to write a thing like that?
His daughters. They hated his gut. They did. Mean to him.
Miss Brooks, I hold you responsible for the condition of your blackboard. And remember, it is from such petty beginnings that more dangerous subversive activities can stem.
I'll have a loyalty check before class. Mr. Conklin, don't you think you're being unduly severe about a relatively minor transgression?
Severe, perhaps. But I challenge your use of the word unduly. After all, I am the man to whom this entire school looks for leadership. As your leader, I must be firm, decisive, wielding my power with justice but authority.
Yes, sire. Sir. I know you're quite a stickler for discipline, Mr. Conklin, and all of us on the faculty try to cooperate. But sometimes your manner is so stern and forbidding, it makes it difficult. What I'm trying to say, I guess, is that you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar.
I don't want flies, I want teachers. I want teachers with a wholesome respect for the inspiring mottoes on which I was brought up. Spare the rod and spoil the child. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And these others here in my office, read the one on that wall, Miss Brooks.
Yes, sir. Only the hands of the strong can hold the reins of leadership.
Now the one next to it.
Through power alone can you command respect.
How true that is.
There seems to be a motto missing, Mr. Conklin.
Which one?
Today, Madison High, tomorrow, the world.
The janitor broke that one while he was dusting. Which brings me to another assignment I have for you this morning. I want you to see that my office is thoroughly cleaned up. I've asked my daughter Harriet to send in one of the boys to do the heavy work, and they'll... Oh, good heavens, she'll probably send in that lame-brained boyfriend of hers, Walter Denton.
Oh, Walter isn't so bad, Mr. Conklin. In fact, compared to his pal, Stretch Snodgrass, his mentality is positively Einsteinian.
If only he wouldn't speak. That voice of his drives me insane.
It's just his age, Mr. Conklin. His voice is probably changing.
Well, it had better hurry. That boy sounds like a canary who has just caught a rancid batch of bird seed. Come in.
Salutations and top of the morning, dear principal.
Spit it out, Walter.
Now that you're here, Denton, I'll be leaving shortly. So pay attention and I'll tell you what I want done.
Yes, sir. You told me you're anticipating the national clean-up, paint-up, fix-up campaign, which starts every spring.
That is correct. I'm a great boy for getting the jump on the next fellow. Therefore, I want you to clean out all the old files you find in my closet. I haven't touched them since I took over this office from my predecessor, Mr. Darwell.
Oh, I remember Mr. Darwell. There were times when we all thought he was a real tyrant.
Oh, you did.
Dear old Mr. Darwell.
This file contains nothing but a bunch of antiquated records and correspondence kept by Darwell for years. You, Denton, will take them all out and destroy them.
Yes, sir.
Burn them up.
To a cinder, sir.
I'm going on a tour of classroom inspection. I haven't cracked the whip round here in, let's see now, just how long has it been?
Yesterday.
Yesterday? That's a hot one. I gotta remember.
Oh, quiet! I received an exceptionally large batch of mail this morning, Miss Brooks. While I'm gone, I want you to open each and every letter, digest its contents, and if it is not of sufficient importance to demand my personal attention, tear it up.
I'll rip it to pieces, Mr. Conklin.
Rumple it. Destroy it.
I'll be merciless.
Hurl it in the basket.
I'll bash it with my bare fist.
I'm going now. Remember, let's get on the ball and stay there.
What am I, a seal?
Gosh, Miss Brooks, he's in a pretty bad mood this morning, isn't he?
Even for him. But you'd better get busy cleaning out those files, Walter.
Yes, ma'am. They're right in this closet here. Gosh, what a bunch of junk. I'll never be able to sort this stuff alone. Will you give me a hand, Miss Brooks?
I'd like to, Walter, but I've got to go through the mail. Why don't you get Stretch Snodgrass to help you?
Oh, he's working in the supply room this morning. He's supposed to be taking inventory before the clean-up, paint-up, fix-up campaign starts this spring. It seems kind of early to me.
Me too, but Mr. Conklin's a great boy for getting the jump on the other fellow.
I know. I've seen him jump on some of the other fellas. Gosh, poor old Stretch will be lost down there.
Maybe I'd better look in on him and see how he's doing.
I wish you would, Miss Brooks. He doesn't know how to take inventory.
He probably doesn't even know how to pronounce it. Stretch Snodgrass.
Hi, Miss Brooks.
How are things in the supply room, Stretch?
All right, I guess. But I really don't know what I'm supposed to do here.
Didn't Mr. Conklin tell you what to do?
No, ma'am, not exactly. When I got to school this morning, his daughter Harriet handed me a memo from him which just said, go to the supply room and take inventory. Well, I'm on a spot, Miss Brooks.
Why?
I can't find no inventory no place. On top of that, Mr. Conklin just stopped by and bawled me out something awful.
Bawled you out? What were you doing?
I wasn't doing nothing. I was just standing here like a stick.
Well, what did Mr. Conklin say to you?
He said, what's the idea of standing there like a stick? So I said, well, I ain't standing here like no stick. And then he said, who's your English teacher, boy? So right away I said, Miss Brooks is my English teacher. That's who's. If he wasn't in such a bad mood, I'd have told him what a boot I get out of taking English off you. Gosh, sometimes I think I'd like to stay in your class forever, Miss Brooks.
Sometimes I think you've got a very good chance. But Stretch, if you're not too busy at the moment, would you please run down to Mr. Conklin's office and help Walter Denton clean out some old files?
Well, I'd be glad to help Walter out, Miss Brooks. Mr. Conklin told me to go from here to the biology lab and tell Mr. Boynton to wash all the cages, preparatory to painting them.
Preparatory?
Yes, ma'am. It seems there's some kind of campaign that starts in the spring.
I'm familiar with it, Stretch. If you'll join Walter in Mr. Conklin's office, I'll be happy to deliver your message to Mr. Boynton. Of course, before I go to the biology lab, I've got to start my own campaign. You know, clean up, fix up, paint up.
You mean your classroom, Miss Brooks?
Classroom, nothing. Me.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment. But first, here is Vern Smith. No other dentifrice offers proof of such results. Proof that Colgate Dental Cream helps stop tooth decay before it starts. 2 years' research at leading universities using Colgate Dental Cream, hundreds of case histories, makes this the most conclusive proof in all dentifrice history on tooth decay. Conclusive proof that when teeth are brushed with Colgate's right after eating, Colgate Dental Cream helps stop tooth decay before it starts. Yes, the toothpaste you use to clean your breath while you clean your teeth now offers a safe, proved way to reduce tooth decay. Modern science shows decay is caused by mouth acids, which are at their worst right after eating. Brushing teeth with Colgate's as directed helps remove acids before they harm enamel. Colgate Dental Cream has been proved to contain all the necessary ingredients, including an exclusive patented ingredient for effective daily dental care. Get Colgate Dental Cream today. Big economy size, only 59 cents. Always use Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay before it starts. Remember, no other dentifrice offers proof of such results.
All right, that's the first portion of Our Miss Brooks from March 5th, 1950. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger Battish. All right, we're tuning in to Our Miss Brooks. This is a broadcast from March 5th, 1950. It's called Clean Up, Paint Up, Fix Up. It stars Eve Arden. Here's the conclusion to Our Miss Brooks.
Well, as Our Miss Brooks headed for the biology lab, Stretch Snodgrass joined his pal Walter Denton in Mr. Conklin's office. They were cleaning out the files in the closet when Walter came to an old letter from the Board of Education. When he finished reading it, he grabbed Stretch by the shoulder.
Hey, Stretch, read this letter.
Let's see. You better read it to me, Walter. I'm saving my eyes for batting practice.
Well, Stretch, it's addressed to Mr. Darwell when he was principal here. It says, Dear Sir, it has come to the attention of the board that you have been flagrantly dictatorial in your dealings with the faculty as well as the student body. As you know, I approve of discipline, but your conduct lately has been overboard. Therefore, please be advised that if you do not reverse your tyrannical methods at once, I will be forced to convene the board to consider your immediate replacement as principal of Madison High. Sincerely, Edgar T. Stone, chairman. You realize what that means, Stretch?
Yeah. Mr. Darwell better watch his step.
No, Mr. Darwell hasn't been here for years. And Mr. Conklin could never ever have seen this letter. It was buried under all kinds of junk. Now, all we gotta do is get some glue and reseal the envelope. Luckily, it's just addressed to the principal's office, Madison High. I can type in Mr. Conklin's name above it.
Why should we do that, Walter?
So that Mr. Conklin thinks he's gonna get the old heave-ho and start acting like a human being around here. Boy, this will be the rib of all time. Now, let me hit that typewriter for a minute. Hand me that glue on the desk.
Here, Walter.
Yeah. There. All set.
Gee, Walter, you got a mind like Machiavelli.
I don't remember assigning two of you to this detail. Oh, what's that you were about to place on my desk, Denton?
Yes. Hmm. Oh, it's just a letter, sir. Miss Brooks gave it to me. She didn't have time to open your mail yet, sir, but I'm sure she'll be back
Stop
in time.
Stop babbling and hand me that letter.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I gotta be running along now.
Oh, one moment. I may have some more chores for you, boy. First, I'll see what the Board of Education has to say. It has come to the attention of the board that you have been flagrantly dictatorial in your dealings with the American. And also.
Bad news, Mr. Conklin?
What? Oh, perhaps you boys had better go now.
Yes, sir. Come on, Walter. We'll see you later, Mr. Conklin.
Yes. Maybe. Come in.
I appointed a student teacher to take charge of my study period, Mr. Conklin. Now I can get right to your mail.
One moment, Miss Brooks, before you sit down.
Yes?
Let me dust that chair for you. There, now, that's better. Now, are you sure you'll be comfortable in this chair? I'd be happy to get you a cushion if you want me to. It has always been my warmest desire to take the burdens off my teachers, make them as light as possible. If you have any suggestions which might help me achieve this desire, you have but to mention them, and I am your willing slave. Your wish is my command.
I can't recall rubbing any lamps around here.
Now, you just forget about that nasty old correspondence of mine. I was just teasing when I said you'd have to go through all my mail. You toddle on out to the grounds and sun yourself for a while. Then when lunchtime comes, meet Mr. Boynton. I know you're fond of him. Have a nice, leisurely luncheon together.
Yes, sir. I'll be happy to toddle along now, but first there's just one question I'd like to ask.
What is that?
I don't know who you are, but what are you doing with Mr. Conklin's head on? Here's a nice table by the window, Mr. Boynton.
It's coming, Miss Brooks. Hey, the cafeteria's pretty crowded today. Here's your tray. I don't have much of an appetite myself. In my second period, Mr. Conklin came into the lab and brought me a bag of donuts and a bottle of milk. He said anyone who worked as diligently as I did needed more nourishment.
That's funny. He insisted that I take a walk around the campus and get some sun.
What's gotten into the old... what's happened to Mr. Conklin?
Maybe he flipped.
Flipped?
An undergraduate expression. I can't understand this sudden metamorphosis myself.
Well, he started off the day by roaring into my lab like a wounded bull elephant and asked me why my cages weren't ready for the clean-up, paint-up, fix-up campaign. I tried to explain that I couldn't possibly paint them because I didn't have any Dutch boy.
Couldn't you have used a brush instead?
Dutch boy is the name of the paint, Miss Brooks. But he wouldn't stand still for any explanations at all. Just barked, "Get it done," and stormed out of the office. Then, less than an hour later, he was back feeding me donuts.
Well, maybe he's just yellowing with age. Mellowing.
Pardon me, Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton, but could Stretch and I sit down at this table with you for a minute?
I suppose so, Walter.
Oh, we're glad to have you, boys.
Well, thanks, Mr. Boynton.
I've got some news for you, Miss Brooks, that'll enhance the enjoyment of your lunch a thousandfold. But it's a deep, dark secret. You and Mr. Boynton have both got to promise you won't breathe a word of this.
Well, I promise. What's the secret, Walter?
You promise, Miss Brooks?
Here's a fork. Take some blood.
It's about the letter Mr. Conklin got from the Board of Education, saying he'd be replaced if he didn't stop acting so...
flagrantly dictatorial in his methods.
Yeah, to both the faculty and students.
What?
No wonder he's been so sweet to us all day.
But suppose Mr. Conklin finds out the letter's a phony.
A phony?
A phony? Not so loud! There's nothing phony about the letter. It's perfectly legitimate. Except that it was sent to Mr. Darwell 6 years ago.
Mr. Darwell?
Mr. Conklin's predecessor.
Yeah, Mr. Conklin's... yeah.
I just typed Mr. Conklin's name on the old envelope, glued it up, he came in and read it, and voila! A human being instead of a ramrod.
Well, don't look now, but the ex-ramrod is bearing down on us.
Well, I better be leaving now.
No, you don't. We're in this thing together.
Well, I've got to go paint cages.
If you act suspiciously now, we'll all be painting cages from the inside.
Yeah, just relax. Treat him like an equal. There's nothing he can do about it.
Ah, what a happy sight it is. Teachers and pupils breaking bread together.
Would you care to rip a hunk of toast with us?
Thank you. I did want to chat with Miss Brooks for a moment, if I'm not disturbing anything.
Oh, not at all, sir. Please sit down.
Park over here.
Yo, flop. Thank you so much, boys. Miss Brooks, as you know, I am a great believer in the power of meekness and humility. Therefore, in front of your friends, I come to you hat in hand to seek a favor.
Poor Mr. Conklin.
How the mighty have fallen.
Quiet, boys. What is it you want of me, Mr. Conklin?
Miss Brooks, you have much influence with the student body as well as the faculty. I wonder if you could get them to see me in the same light that you do.
Aren't you in enough trouble already? That is, I
know what you mean, Miss Brooks, and you're right. I have acted the martinet at times, but it's only because of those confounded mottos in my office. On every wall, I'm confronted with signs, spare the rod and spoil the child, respect through power, law of the jungle. They goad one, Miss Brooks, whip one into a frenzy of ambition until the real me is submerged, snowed under, suffocated.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Well, why don't you get rid of some of those signs, Mr. Conklin?
Well, an excellent idea, Mr. Boynton. Perhaps I could replace them with more humane and genteel parables. I'm open to suggestions on that score as well.
How about, I have been a marble-headed monster?
Walter, that's very rude.
On the contrary, Miss Brooks, it has quite a ring to it. In fact, it might come in handy as a reminder.
Oh, but Mr. Conklin,
Please, Miss Brooks.
Well, if you say so, Marblehead.
Music to my ears. I've always been ready to criticize others for their shortcomings. Perhaps if I had a list of my own to refer to each morning, it would help me be more tolerant. Do you think you could compile one?
It might take months.
Oh, you Walter Denton. You know, Miss Brooks, I don't believe I've ever mentioned it before, but I love this boy.
Sure you do, Mr. Conklin. I can tell by the way the veins stand out in your neck when you say it.
Well, I'm serious about this list of my shortcomings, Miss Brooks. I'll be deeply grateful if you bring a list containing all your complaints to my office as soon as possible. Now, remember, Miss Brooks, don't try to spare my feelings. Give it to me with both barrels. You'll be helping me in the end.
Mr. Conklin, I can't think of anything I'd rather do with both barrels.
I've cleaned up those old files for you, Daddy.
Thank you, Harriet. You're a dear, sweet girl.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
As well as could be expected, Harriet.
Let me clean some of this junk off your desk. You don't need this old letter anymore, do you?
Old letter? What old letter?
This one, from the Board of Education. The envelope is postmarked 1944.
1944? Let's see that. They must have taken this from Mr. Darwell's files and typed my name on the envelope.
What are you talking about, Daddy?
Harriet, your daddy has been the victim of a monumental hoax. But now the shoe is on the other foot. And believe me, this is the foot that knows how to use it. Must be the committee. I want to see them alone. Harriet, please leave by the other door.
I'd rather stay and see what it's all about, Daddy.
I don't care what you'd rather. I'm at the helm of this ship. Go.
Yes, Daddy.
Come in.
We brought the little reminder for your desk, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, it's you, Miss Brooks. Forgive me for not rising. Without my glasses, I didn't notice that a lady had entered the room.
Watch that fella.
Indeed, I will. Now, if you'll be kind enough to read me your bill of particulars concerning my various infamies...
We're all going to read some of it, Mr. Conklin. Will you begin, Miss Brooks?
Thank you, Mr. Boynton. Whereas I, Osgood Conklin, principal of Madison High School, desiring to improve relations between myself, the faculty, and the student body... Your turn, Walter.
Do promise to keep the following ever before me as a reminder of past sins of which I am heartily ashamed.
And which I ain't never going to repeat no more.
Splendid. Please continue.
Wait till you hear this. I readily admit that on many occasions I have acted like a pompous, puffed-up, ill-tempered, addle-pated blowhard.
Forgive me, but it seems to me you've omitted maladjusted.
Please don't interrupt. That's in the next paragraph. Now, where was I?
Addle-pated blowhard.
Oh, yes. Addle-pated blowhard. And on other occasions, I have bellowed like a bull.
Screamed like an elephant.
Hissed like a viper.
Snorted like a buffalo.
And otherwise exhibited the behavior of a maladjusted nincompoop.
Oh, there it is. Now, before you go any further, I'd like you all to sign this document for me.
Oh, we already have, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, good, good. Then perhaps you'd be kind enough to autograph this other manuscript sent from the Board of Education in this envelope postmarked 1944 and intended for my unfortunate predecessor, who doubtless had to contend with just such perfidious malcontents as you, who stand quaking before me this very moment!
Get the high ground, boys! The bridge is out! Having expected a one-way ticket to Devil's Island, I thought the punishment Mr. Conklin meted out was comparatively just. However, it was after 7 o'clock that evening before I got home.
Why, Connie, I was beginning to get worried about you. Where in the world have you been all afternoon?
I was doing a little writing, Mrs. Davis.
Writing? What were you writing?
Oh, I don't think you'd be interested. It's not your type of stuff.
No. I'm interested in everything you do, Connie. Please tell me all about it.
Well, if you insist, Mrs. Davis, but you'd better sit down. This may take quite a while.
All right. There. Now, what did you write?
I wrote, our principal is the best principal that any school ever had. Our principal is the best principal that any school ever had. Our principal is the best principal that any school ever had.
Next week, tune into another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, and Leonard Smith. For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evening over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There's a great comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks from March 5th, 1950. Clean Up, Paint Up, Fix Up. That's the name of that show starring Eve Arden. It's aired on CBS. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Chicago Party Place would like to remind listeners that readers are leaders and education in the home is every bit as important as in school. When we encourage our kids to read, we take a powerful step toward the future of our community. Help them understand by saying yes to education and graduation, they say yes to life. That's from Chicago Party Place, where service isn't just a courtesy, it's a commitment. For more information, call 773-643-5169. That's 773-643-5169 for Chicago Party Place in Chicago.
Hey, Lisa, what radio show had this sound? Dum da dum dum. Dum da dum dum.
Are you kidding? Dragnet.
Well, that's what's up next. It's
another
third hour.
I am ready and waiting.
Dragnet starring Jack Webb. We have a great show from 1952 coming your way called The Big Whiff.
Really?
Yeah, maybe he was striking out. You know, he was swinging the bat and whiffing.
That could be it, or it could be something else.
It could be a little smelly.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger Badish. All right, it is 1:05 in the morning. We're here till 2 a.m. And don't forget, tonight, when we come back here, it's Roger, Lisa, and my favorite songs from 1977. Oh, it was a great year, 1977, Lisa.
There were some great songs.
I'll say. And
even Roger's song is good.
Yeah, gee, Roger thanks. Picked a great song. All three so of the much. Songs are great.
Well, wait a minute. If I was a .2... last week. What am I this week?
Okay, you were.
Carl has no recollection.
No, here's
of what
he
happened. Chose.
No, I do. I remember. I know what he chose. 0.5 you had 0.5, for Sarah's
okay.
song, but then after I heard it, went up to
Sarah
a 2.5.
Yeah,
Sarah's
I know.
Yeah.
I feel so.
So,
happy
but
with
your
that.
Song right now yeah. is about a 3. So it's more than you had last week.
I give you more credit than that, Roger.
I have so much to look forward to. You know, yeah. The sky's the limit for my next selection.
That's right. Lisa's is a 4.
Okay.
And a 4.
Mine's a 12 on a rating from 1 to 10.
He's skewed. I will use that. That's the most respectful word I could think of at the moment.
Yes.
I'm skewed up.
Skewed.
Yeah, I'm really skewed up, I'll tell you that.
He's askewed.
Yeah.
Askewed.
So that's all beginning tonight at 11:05. You can start texting in. But that's a good, I don't know, how many hours? A
few hours away.
20-something hours away. Mm-hmm. But you can win some Twilight Zone CDs. So check out, go online and see what the top 100 songs from 1977 are. Then you would text in, again, beginning tonight at 11:05, what you think Lisa's favorite song is, Roger's and my favorite song. So no, win some fun stuff. All right, in this hour we have Dragnet starring Jack Webb, and it's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming action thriller, The Foreigner, about a businessman whose past erupts when his daughter dies in an act of terrorism. And the winner gets a Twilight Zone CD set.
Very nice. 312-981-7200 is the number. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Stu in Mrs. Doubtfire.
People change, Ron. I'm pushing 40. I don't want to spend the rest of my life by myself.
Pushing 40.
See?
Yeah.
You can relate to that one, huh?
Yeah, I'm pushing 60.
No, you are not.
Well, 5 more years. 6 more years.
Six
more
but
years.
But who's counting?
He's counting. 312. I'm just off by one.
Oh, he's just slightly
one
off.
Number. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
Chicago.
This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
People change, Ron. I'm pushing 40. I don't want to spend the rest of my life by myself.
We have Pat on the line. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. So thank who you. Is that actor with that gorgeous voice?
And he is gorgeous. Pierce
Quit talking about me again.
I know.
Gosh. I know.
Darn it, right?
You know, don't
Pierce
talk
Brosnan, Carl Amari,
about me like
you know,
that.
They're almost the same person.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Pat, see how lucky I am? I get to work across from Pierce Brosnan every weekend.
Yeah.
You know,
oh
some
gosh.
People got it, right? I know.
Absolutely.
I feel very lucky. Pat, you're a winner, and you have won a Twilight
Thank
Zone.
You.
It's a 4-CD set. It's fantastic. It's produced by Mr. Brosnan over here, and it's hosted by Stacey Keach. So hopefully it has a big picture of Pierce right on the cover.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
Take care.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye. Thank you. Okay, it's time now for Dragnet. This was a great police procedural. Came to radio in 1949 and lasted 9 seasons. It was true crime stories of closed cases. They actually went to the LAPD. Now, this is how much the LAPD liked Jack Webb, because he really kind of glorified their efforts, right? So they said, look, you can use closed cases and dramatize. So they literally went into the files of the Los Angeles Police Department, and then their writers took those cases and dramatized them. Now, they changed the names. You hear them say, the names have been changed to protect the innocent. It was a great, great radio series, and then made a very long transition to television. It was on TV for 16 seasons. There were movies. He created it, Jack Webb. And everybody knows Dragnet. We're going to listen to a great episode now called The Big Whiff. This is from June 5th, 1952, part one of Dragnet.
The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A woman is found dying in a vacant lot, her identity unknown. Your job? Investigate.
Dragnet, the
document a drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, October 16th. It was cloudy in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. It was 9:48 p.m. when I got to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital, Dr. Hall's office.
Joe, how are you?
Hi, Doc. How about that case you got in from 7th and Union? How's she doing?
She died about 5 minutes ago.
Uh-huh. Fill me in. What do you got on it?
You talked to the radio car officers, ones that handled the call?
Frank's talking to him now out in the lobby. Thought I'd check in with you while he was handling that end.
Not an awful lot to tell you, Joe. Ambulance G2 brought her in from the location. She was alive when they brought her in. Did everything I could for her. Didn't help much. Too far gone.
Yeah, what's it look like?
Chloroform poisoning. Pretty obvious. Probably self-administered. Looks like that anyway. She didn't last long.
It's a little unusual, huh? Chloroform?
Yeah. Under the circumstances, it sure is.
Anything else?
How do you mean?
Well, any probable causes? Any marks on her?
No, a little scratch on her wrist. That's about all.
Where you got her now? Can we look at her?
Yeah, bag number 3. Come on.
All right. Ed Barrett called us, asked us for help. It's a rough night, huh?
Yeah. Traffic went crazy tonight. Dozen cases in the last 2 hours. Couple of homicides, too. Busy night.
You got the weekend coming up, huh?
Yeah, not looking forward to it. Here we go. Over here.
Chloroform sure hangs on, doesn't it? Sure strong.
Notice the burns around her mouth, the nose, discoloration.
Well, who is she? Any idea?
We got her down as Jane Doe. You're going to have to take it from there. I understand the radio car officers couldn't identify her.
Apparently pretty well off, huh? Nice clothes. Seems to be well kept.
I'd say so. Expensive jewelry there. The rings, wristwatch.
A little strange for a probable suicide, isn't it? Looks like she took good care of herself. Hair all done up, fingernails. About how old, would you say?
Not more than 35, just about that. Here's the chart on her.
Mm-hmm.
Time arrival, 9:38 p.m. from southwest corner of 7th and Union, vacant lot. Reason for call, possible drunk woman down. Jane Doe, number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Female, Caucasian, approximate age 35. Weight 128 1/4. Height 5'4". Brown hair, hazel eyes. Listed as Nordic descent. Probable suicide. That's it.
Okay, Doc, thanks. I better look up Frank, see what he's got, huh?
Okay. Haven't notified the coroner yet. You fellas want to take care of that?
Yeah, sure, we'll call. About all we can do unless we find some relatives to notify, huh?
Joe?
Yeah, Frank.
Oh, hi, Doc. How are you?
Frank, looks like you're losing weight.
Yeah, 4 pounds in 2 weeks. Not too bad for me, anyway. What'd you get, Joe?
Chloroform poisoning. Probable suicide. Find out who she is?
I gotta get back to my office. If there's anything I can help you with, come on back.
Right, Doc. Thanks very much.
Okay.
How about it? Any identification?
No, I talked to the fellas that took the call. Unit 182 was a routine call. 390W down, they couldn't find out who put the call in. So they found her in a vacant lot lying over against the side of the building.
Yeah.
They said she looked like she'd been drinking, then I got a whiff of the chloroform. And they found this empty container by her side. Here.
Yeah. It ties in, huh?
They were careful handling it.
Anything else?
Well, while they're waiting for the ambulance, they talked to some of the people in the neighborhood. They couldn't tell them anything about the woman. The building they found her next to is a vacant store.
No identification on her at all? Huh?
No, nothing. No purse or wallet. I checked missing persons. No one of her description reported. Fellas who handled the call said they went over her clothing. No marks of identification.
Mm-hmm. Better notify Leighton Prince, huh? Maybe they can identify her.
Already called him, Joe. Looks like probable suicide. Sure, a new twist, though. Chloroform rope.
Mm, doesn't figure, does it?
What do you think?
I don't know. No violence committed on the body. No indication of robbery. She had a wristwatch on. Rings, too.
Wouldn't figure anyway. Chloroform angle.
Yeah. No other physical evidence out there, huh? I mean, besides the chloroform container?
Nothing else besides a handkerchief.
Hmm?
Yeah, a plain white handkerchief. Chloroform on it. They found it next to the body. It's the only thing that doesn't fit 100%.
What do you mean?
It's a man's handkerchief.
10:25 p.m. Frank and I took the dead woman's clothing, the handkerchief, and the almost empty container of chloroform and drove back downtown to the office. We dropped off the clothing and the handkerchief at the crime lab to be processed for possible identifying marks. The chloroform container was taken to Leighton fingerprints for examination. The following morning, the body of the unidentified woman was taken to the county morgue for posting. As soon as the dead woman's prints were made available to us, they were checked through our record bureau and also through the record bureau at the sheriff's office. In addition, they also made a run on her description. They were unable to identify her. We checked with the crime lab, but they couldn't help us either. A detailed examination of the dead woman's clothing failed to yield any leads as to her identity. Leighton Prince didn't have any better luck with the chloroform container. The only prints they found on it were those of the dead woman. Meantime, the morning papers had picked up the story and given it front page billing. 11:16 a.m.
How's that again, Doc? Yeah, I see. A little unusual, wouldn't you say? Yeah. Okay, we'll pick it up after lunch. Right, goodbye.
Anything?
Yeah, Doc Cephalo at the morgue just finished posting the body.
What'd he say?
The chloroform killed her. They even found traces of it in the stomach.
Huh?
That's right.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
Doesn't leave much doubt. Suicide.
No indication it was anything else, is it? I got it. Homicide, Friday talking. Yes, sir. Yeah? Mitchell?
Mm-hmm.
That's so? Yeah, sure, be glad to. Yeah, we'll be here. You want to give us your address? Hello? Well, here we go.
What was it, Joe?
Somebody by the name of James Mitchell. He's on his way down to see us, wants to talk to us about the dead woman.
Yeah?
He says he killed her. 11:50 a.m. While Frank and I waited around for Mitchell to show up, we checked his name through R&I, but we were unable to find anything on him. A few minutes before 1 p.m., a short, blonde-haired man in a blue serge suit entered the squad room and asked for us. He introduced himself as James Mitchell. Frank and I took him to the interrogation room where we started to question him. He told us he was a steel worker by trade, currently unemployed. He said he was originally from Alabama, that he'd been in California for approximately 2 years. After that, he lapsed into silence. We tried to question him about the dead woman, but we made little headway. The only admission we could get from him was that he killed the woman. Outside of that, he refused to say anything.
Now, how about it, Mitchell? What's the trouble? You called us, volunteered a confession. You said you killed the woman. You wanted to tell us a story. Now, why don't you answer our questions?
Jim, how about it? Aren't you feeling well? You want us to call a doctor? Jim?
You're not giving us much of an out, mister. You volunteer to make yourself a suspect in this thing. You say you killed the woman. Now, why don't you answer the questions?
We can't keep this up forever. You ought to know that. You haven't answered a question in almost an hour now. Look, if you're not going to talk, Jim, there's only one thing we can do. We're going to have to book you.
Mitchell? Is that what you want?
Go ahead and book me. I killed her. Go on, book me.
Well, why can't you tell us the story? Now, you admit you killed the woman. Why won't you tell us about it?
Why should I? I killed her. That's all you have to know.
You said on the phone you'd tell us the whole story, didn't you? Now, what made you change your mind?
You got the story. I killed her. All there is to it.
You know better than that, Mitchell. You know the woman very well?
No, not very well.
What was her name?
Mary.
Mary what?
Mary, that's all. I met her in a bar. I didn't know her well. I killed her. That's all you got to know. I had to.
Why'd you have to, Jim?
I don't have to tell you. I had a reason. Good reason.
Robbery?
I don't have to say.
You have a fight with her? Lover's quarrel?
Maybe. What's the difference?
Well, this bar where you met Mary, that in downtown L.A., was it?
Yes, downtown. She had it coming. I'm glad I did it.
Not worth much, huh?
She was when I met her.
Well, what happened? She go off the deep end?
Guess so. What's the difference? She's dead.
But why'd you turn yourself in, Jim? Or you couldn't beat it?
Maybe.
How do you mean?
I could have stayed out of your way if I wanted to. For a while, anyway. I didn't want to.
Why not, Jim?
Good reason. I'm glad I killed her. She had it coming. Now go ahead and do what you want. I know what the rap is. I'll pay for it.
Well, if you're willing to take the rap, Jim, why not tell us the whole story, huh?
You got the story. I killed her. That's all you need.
Don't you want to brief us in on the details? How it happened, how it came about? Might be extenuating circumstances. You can't tell.
Well, how do you mean?
Different things that might throw a new slant on the case. Court's not going to hand down a decision until they get the whole story.
You mean about Mary? I'll never tell them about her. Lousy thing she did to me. Never tell anybody about it.
Must have been pretty bad, huh? I mean, the way you took it out on her.
She was rotten. All the way through. I had to kill her.
Well, what happened with the chloroform, Jim? Didn't it work fast enough for you?
Chloroform?
Yeah, uh-huh. Didn't it react on her fast enough for you?
No. No, it didn't. I hated her.
Yeah, I guess you did. Must have had quite a scrap with her. Struggled quite a bit, didn't you?
Yeah, she fought me all the way. I got her, though. I hated her. Out of my mind, I hated her so much.
Well, we've been trying to figure it out, Jim. What'd you hit her with? I mean, around the head and on the neck. What'd you use? Piece of metal?
Yeah. Angle iron.
Uh-huh.
Kind of lost my head. I kept beating her. She tried to scream, but I had my hand over her mouth, and then she fell down. She didn't make a sound after that.
I see. Well, how come you took her jewelry? I mean, if you just wanted to kill her, how is it you took all her valuables, too? Jim?
How about it, Mitchell?
Well, I don't know. Spur of the moment, I guess. I took them, but I didn't keep them. I threw them away. I don't remember where. I'm glad it's over.
All right, Jim. Now, what's this all about? You didn't kill that woman. You know that as well as we do.
Well, what are you talking about? Of course I killed her. She's dead, ain't she? How many times do I have to admit it?
The woman had one mark in her body, Mitchell. A small scratch on the wrist.
Huh?
Not a single wound on the head, none on the neck either.
Well, I killed her, that's all you gotta know, not saying anything there.
All the woman's valuables weren't taken either, Jim. She was found with a couple of rings on her hands, an expensive watch, a bracelet, too. Now, come on, Jim, what's the angle here?
You can't prove I didn't do it. You can't prove that.
I think we can.
Now, why can't you just take my word for it? It's the queerest setup I ever saw. I'm willing to admit I killed her, and you won't believe me. What kind of cops are you, anyway?
Where'd you spend last night, Jim? Where were you?
I don't know. I don't remember.
You remember. Now, how about it?
It's the queerest setup I ever saw. Whole town. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah?
Look, I come here from Alabama. I told you that. I've been here for 22 months. A long time. It's almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Queerest town I ever saw. Thousands of people all over, millions of them. People all around you, all over the place, everywhere you go. I didn't know any of them. Not a one. They didn't know me. 22 months. Couldn't get to know nobody. I still don't. They don't know me either.
Yeah.
Tried to get acquainted. Just seemed to never could. Nobody knew me. Nobody cared. They didn't even know who I was. What kind of town is that? 22 months right here. They don't even know who I am. Nobody knows. Living alone, you just get sick of it. Get sick and tired of it.
That's what brought all this on, huh?
Well, I mean, at least they'll notice me. They'll know I'm here. I killed a woman. They'll know who I am now.
You ever spend any time in a hospital, Mitchell? Institution?
Now, what'd you have to ask that for? Just because I want to know people, want to notice me? That doesn't make me crazy. Can't be alone all the time. You got to have somebody notice you.
Were you ever in an institution, Jim?
Just once, only a couple of months. It wasn't anything. Look, can't you just forget what I said? I mean, I told you I killed a woman. The papers are going to be out pretty soon. Pictures and things, probably a big write-up.
Yeah.
Well, can't we let it go at that? I killed her. Just forget the rest?
No, I'm afraid not.
Why not? We'll just make out it's that way. People get to know me anyway. At least they'll know I'm around. I won't be alone.
There's no use worrying, Jim.
Huh?
You won't be alone anymore.
That's right. He's going to have some cellmates. He's not going to be alone anymore, Lisa. That's the first portion of Dragnet with the big whiff from 1952, starring the one and only Jack Webb. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Intense Pest Control would like to remind listeners that readers are leaders, and education in the home is every bit as important as in school. When we encourage our kids to read, we take a powerful step toward the future of our community. Help them understand that. By saying yes to education and graduation, they say yes to life. That's from Intense Pest Control, where service isn't just a courtesy, it's a commitment. For more information, call 773-876-1197. That's 773-876-1197 for Intense Pest Control at 7712 South Drexel Avenue in Chicago.
Hey, Roger.
You?
A little earlier, you weren't here yet, I don't think. I was talking about the first classic radio show I ever heard. As a kid, I was 12 years old, 1975, and I heard the episode of Suspense on a Country Road. Oh, are you familiar with that episode?
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've heard that.
Oh, really?
It's one of the more better-known ones. I mean, it's been played a lot.
Yeah.
I should say. Yeah.
It's, in my opinion, I mean, I've heard hundreds of Suspense episodes. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, even though it was the first show I ever heard and I just fell in love with the show and I fell in love with the classic radio from that very moment forward, I've been involved in classic radio licensing and collecting these shows.
Mm-hmm.
That show sort of was the, you know, the spark plug for all of that. But that show is so amazing. Cary Grant stars in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to let you know and to let all of our listeners know that if you go to my website, classicradiostore.com, you can digitally download that show absolutely free.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it's and I'm telling you, it's the full show with all the original commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Autolite was the sponsor at the time. It's digitally remastered. It's an amazing sound quality. It's direct from the master transcription. And it's for everyone to download. And it's to me, it's one of the best shows ever in the series. And there was about 1,000 episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that show, I hope you'll go to Classic Radio Store, Roger, and digitally download it, Bluetooth it. Listen to it in the car when you're picking up your grandchildren this week.
Oh, I sit out there for an hour.
Yeah.
So I'll have more than enough time to listen to it. And then when is it again? On Monday or Tuesdays?
Yeah, we send the one out on Mondays.
On Mondays, right.
But you can get this at any time. Just go to classicradiostore.com. It's the very first show on the website.
Awesome.
Digitally download it. You will love it. You'll love it. And I give a little story about how I first heard it and all that. So check it out. Go to the store and check it out.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I've got this piano thing down, don't I?
Yeah, you've mentioned that like every Saturday.
I haven't missed a key. I haven't missed a key.
No, you're right on it.
I'd rate it at about a 4.
2.5.
Right now.
Yeah, a 4?
About a 4.
I'm going to go with 2.5. I
don't want you to get such a swelled head right now. Then there's no room for improvement.
This is true. You know, I got to tell you, Roger, I really like your song for this week.
Well, good. I appreciate
it. Or this year, 1977.
Yeah, 77. Did you listen to it again?
I haven't exactly been a huge fan of your songs so far.
Yeah.
But this one, I really have to be right there with you on it.
Well, God bless.
Well,
great.
You know,
that's
Nick,
a high
Nick
praise.
Nick laughed at me last week with my song.
He actually laughed at both of you and praised my song.
Yeah.
Yeah, he liked Roger's song. No, he didn't like my song or your song.
Yeah. No. Well, then they must be bad songs.
My song is the greatest song ever written.
Well, the good news here is we're allowed to disagree with Nick DiGilio. He is great, but we can disagree.
I wouldn't have.
Oh, what a night. 1963.
Oh, I will, and I did.
All right. Are you ready to get back to Dragnet? You ready, Roger, for
Dragnet?
I'm always
ready for Dragnet.
All right, let's get back to this broadcast from 1952. Here is Jack Webb as Sergeant Joe Friday in the conclusion of Dragnet.
1:38 p.m. We continued to question the self-accused suspect, James Mitchell, and he finally told us that he'd been confined for a period of 18 months in a state mental hospital in Alabama. That had been more than 3 years before. The questioning also left no doubt in our mind that Mitchell had nothing at all to do with the death of the unidentified woman. A sister of Mitchell's living in Alabama was contacted, and she agreed to come out west as soon as possible to look after her brother. In the meantime, he was delivered to the care of psychiatrists at the county hospital. The incident of a man confessing guilt of a crime of which he's wholly innocent certainly wasn't anything new. Like police officers all over the country, all over the world, we've come to accept it as almost a routine part of a criminal investigation. Most of the time, the would-be criminal's suffering with mental trouble. Sometimes it's a thirst for notoriety. In any event, they all have to be checked, every one of them. It means time, trouble, and money. Hours of cautious interrogation. More hours of checking stories that have basis only in the imagination of a sick mind. They slow the investigation, they waste hundreds of man hours, but like anonymous leads or would-be witnesses, they can't be ignored. It's part of the job. Saturday, October 18th. The newspapers continued to cooperate by giving us front page space to the story of the unidentified woman.
Joe?
Yeah, how'd you do?
Nothing. Identification wasn't even close. How about Brian Lopez? What are they doing on that call of theirs?
Well, they're over at the morgue now with a boy, 16-year-old. Kid was pretty wrought up when he came in.
We sure had a parade of them. All last night, all this morning.
Well, it doesn't hurt our chances any. The more, the better.
I suppose so. Not going to make much headway if we can't identify her. Any answers on the all points we got out on it?
Yeah, four of them. They all been checked. Nothing.
Chewing gum, Joe? New kind, tangerine flavor.
No, thanks.
How about that check of the hospitals around town? Anything show up there yet?
No, not so far. The scar on the woman's leg was from an operation, all right. Doc figures it might not have been done in a hospital, though. It was a minor operation. Could have been done in a doctor's office, maybe.
That'd stop it, sure. Tough enough checking hospitals for a record of the operation. Next to impossible to check every doctor in town for it.
Well, even then, we could miss. Don't know where the woman's from. She could have had the operation done anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get it. Homicide, Friday talking. Yeah, Tom. Well, I know. You did? That's so. Yeah, okay, fine. You bet. Thanks, Tom. It was Brian. He and Lopi are driving that boy over to Georgia Street, the 16-year-old.
What happened?
Well, they took the boy to the morgue. They showed him the body, asked him if he recognized it.
What'd she say?
It's his mother.
2:05 p.m. Frank and I left the office and drove over to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. The 16-year-old boy who had identified the dead woman as his mother was being treated for shock and hysteria. The youngster told Brian and Lopez that his name was Arnold Hopkins and that he'd been living with his mother at a Norwood Street address. After he was given a sedative and recovered himself a bit, the boy was driven to the home of his aunt and uncle out near Barnsdale Park. That night, Frank and I called on the boy and found him sufficiently recovered to answer a few questions. He confirmed his identity of the body he'd viewed that afternoon as that of his mother, Mrs. Jeanette Hopkins. He said he was an only child and that his father was dead. He told us his mother had been working for the past 6 years as coast representative for an Eastern cosmetics firm. We asked him what had happened the night his mother disappeared.
The phone just rang about, well, when we were finishing dinner.
Mm-hmm.
About 8 o'clock, maybe quarter after.
Uh-huh.
Well, when Ma hung up, she said something important come up. She had to go out to see somebody. She said she had to see him right away. She got her coat and left. It's the last time I saw her.
Well, who was she going to see, Arnold? Did she tell you?
No, she didn't. I heard her talking on the phone, though. Heard her say Leo. She said it a couple of times. Leo.
Where was she going to meet this person, Arnold? You happen to overhear that?
No, I didn't. I think she said, okay, I'll meet you there, Leo, and she hung up. And she got her coat, kissed me goodbye, and she went out.
Did she leave on foot, or was she driving, you remember?
Oh, on foot. My mother didn't drive. Who's Leo, so?
Your mother ever talk about him?
Heard her talking to him on the phone a couple of times, that's about all.
Well, do you know where he lives? What he looks like? Can you tell us anything about him at all?
No, sir, nothing. I wouldn't know him if I saw him.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
Saturday, October 18th, 8:30 p.m. Frank Smith and I continued interviewing the dead woman's son, 16-year-old Arnold Hopkins. The big lead pointed in the direction of the man known as Leo, who telephoned Mrs. Hopkins Thursday night, little more than an hour before she died, and made an appointment to meet her. It was a good lead, but it didn't go too far. All the boy could tell us was that the man's name was Leo. He'd heard his mother address a man by that name on the telephone several times, but that was the extent of it. He didn't know Leo's last name. He didn't know where he lived. He had no idea where his mother was to meet the man the night she died. We talked to the boy's aunt and uncle, the dead woman's brother and sister-in-law, but they couldn't help us either. Frank Smith and I obtained a list of all of Mrs. Hopkins' friends and business associates known to the son and the aunt and the uncle. We spent the rest of the weekend checking with them. Most of them gave us pretty much the same story. Mrs. Hopkins was well-liked and well-respected, both in her business and private life. She was devoted to her teenage son. She didn't drink, and socially her behavior was beyond question. She attended church regularly. She was active in several women's clubs, engaged in social and religious work. None of the people we talked to could think of any reason that she would want to end her own life. All of them denied any knowledge of the man known as Leo. Monday afternoon, October 20th, Frank and I had another meeting with the victim's son, Arnold Hopkins. We had him check over the personal effects found on the body.
Yes, sir, that's hers. The other ring, too.
How about this bracelet, son?
Yes, sir. She always wore that. My dad gave it to her, I think, when he was alive, I mean. She always wore it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the wristwatch, two rings, the bracelet, and this lapel pin here. This is about it, son?
Yes, sir, I guess so. You have her necklace, too.
How's that?
My mother's necklace. She was wearing it that night. She had it on when she left the house. Didn't you find it?
What kind of necklace is it, son? What's it look like?
Well, it's made like the bracelet is. That one there. Mm-hmm. See, the two of them go together. It's a set.
Your mother wear expensive jewelry like that every day, did she?
No, sir. She wore the bracelet quite a bit, not the necklace, though. She only wore that when she was dressed up. I thought about it yesterday. I meant to tell you about it.
What's that, son?
Well, right after she got the phone call that night, when she told me she had to go out.
Yeah.
Well, she went back and got her coat, and then she came in the living room and kissed me goodbye. She had the necklace in her hand.
You sure she took it with her?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm positive. After she kissed me goodbye, she went over to the mirror, and I saw her put the necklace on. She was wearing it when she left. I didn't think much about it till later on. Most of the time, she only wears it when she dresses up. She wasn't very dressed up that night.
Joe? Yeah. Can you describe the necklace for us, son, exactly what it looks like?
Yes, sir, I think I can.
When you saw your mother with a necklace on, did you think to ask her about it?
Yeah, I did. She said she was wearing it because she wanted to look pretty. She was going to meet a good friend.
Mm-hmm. And she didn't say where?
No, sir. I guess she was wrong, huh? About her necklace, I mean.
No, son. About her friend.
Monday, 3:18 p.m. We got a description of the necklace from the Hopkins boy, confirmed it with his aunt and uncle, and then we double-checked it at the jeweler's, where it had been purchased. After that, we contacted the pawn shop detail and burglary division. The necklace and its description was put on the stolen property list, and copies were sent to secondhand jewelry stores and pawn shops throughout the area. We also got out a broadcast and an APB on it. 4:15 the following afternoon, we got a reply from the San Diego Police Department. A pawn shop owner down there had reported taking in the necklace the Friday before, which matched the description of the one we were looking for. The man who pawned the necklace listed his name in the pawn shop's buy book as Raymond Butler. San Diego officers had checked out the home address that he'd given. It was a vacant lot.
The necklace was sent back to Los Angeles, where it was identified as Mrs. Hopkins. The description of the man who'd pawned the necklace was forwarded from San Diego together with a photostatic copy of the suspect's signature, and we got out an all-points bulletin on him. 2 days passed. Nothing. Along with Brian and Lopez, we continued checking all public places in the general area where the body of Mrs. Hopkins had been found. You got anything, Frank?
Talked to a man by the name of Wagner, Joe. He told me she used to do a lot of traveling, business trips, most of them to San Diego.
Uh-huh.
Wagner says he heard she had a boyfriend down there, a tall, dark-haired fellow. That's all, no name.
I get it. Homicide, Friday. What? Oh, yeah, Lopi. Mm-hmm. Where? Checks out, does it? Yeah, that's good. Fine. Okay, thanks, Lopi. Yeah, right away.
Anything, Joe?
Lopez, he and Brian just checked a bar out in the neighborhood where the body was found.
Mm-hmm.
They talked to the bartender in the place, showed him the description of the man who pawned the necklace. Bartender says he knows the man.
He sure?
Pretty sure. He told Brian and Lopi that the man's either a boxer or a wrestler, something like that, anyway.
You know the man's name, where he lives?
Says his name's Taylor. No home address.
You know his first name?
Yeah. Leo.
1:25 p.m. After interviewing four other people who were in the bar the night of Mrs. Hopkins' death, Lopez and Brian checked back in at the office. They told us that at least one of the four persons they talked to, in addition to the bartender, was sure that the description of the suspect who pawned the necklace fitted a man known as Leo Taylor, who was in the bar the previous Thursday night. He was seen in the place between 8:30 and 9 p.m., and he was seen with a woman answering Mrs. Hopkins' general description. The bartender had no idea where the man lived, but he seemed fairly certain of the man's name, Leo Taylor, and his occupation, either wrestling or boxing. 5:05 p.m., we made a run on Taylor's name and description through R&I, and we got a make. We checked his handwriting, and that matched out also. He had one previous arrest for assault and disorderly conduct. His residence was a West 11th Street address. We checked it out, but he'd moved 6 months before. The landlady had no forwarding address on him, but she told us one of the places he used to frequent was a gym on South Olive down near Olympic. We ran it down.
All right, come on. I'm getting tired of
I checked with a fellow in the office over there. Joe says the man we once taken a shower back there, locker room.
All right. In here?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Hey, excuse me. Your name Leo Taylor?
How's that?
I said, are you Leo Taylor?
Yeah, that's right. What is it?
Police officers would like to talk to you.
Oh, I'm taking a shower right now. You want to wait a while?
Well, keep, Taylor. We want to talk to you now.
All right.
All right, what's the rush? What's it all about?
I want to talk to you downtown.
What do you want me downtown for?
A routine check. Like to ask a few questions.
About what?
Jeanette Hopkins.
That's so? What about her?
When's the last time you saw the woman, Taylor?
I don't know. A couple of months ago. At least that. Why?
Well, you can talk about it downtown.
Well, let's talk now. It'll take me a little time to get dressed. What's the pitch?
You know as well as we do.
You want to throw me that shirt, Mac? Thanks. What do you mean I know as well as you do? Know what?
No rush, Leo. We can talk downtown.
I read about it in the papers. Terrible thing. Just gonna look her up one of these days. It's too bad.
You live in Los Angeles, Taylor?
Yeah, why?
Ever get down to San Diego?
Once in a while, not too often. You don't think I had anything to do with it, do you?
How do you mean, Leo? With what?
I mean, Jeanette, she's dead. You don't think I had a hand in it, do you?
I tell you, I'm on a level with you, Leo. We've been on this thing a week. We've got you placed in San Diego. We've got you placed here. You say you haven't seen Mrs. Hopkins for 2 months. We can do a lot better than that. You were with her in San Diego 2 weeks ago. You were drinking with her in a bar out there last Thursday night. You were with her 20 minutes before she died. We got all we need, Leo.
Got my coat there, gray one?
Check the pockets, Frank.
Yeah. Gonna take a lot of proof. I guess you know that. Gonna take a lot of it.
We got it.
You better have. Let's see. Keys, wallet, comb. Yeah. Okay, let's go.
No, just a minute, Leo.
Yeah?
Pawn ticket here. You forgot it.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On January 28th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 89, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. When confronted with the evidence and testimony against him, Leo Francis Taylor broke down and confessed to the murder of Mrs. Jeanette Hopkins. She'd been paying blackmail to Taylor in order to keep their affair secret, but a month before her death, she refused to pay him any more. Taylor threatened her again, and she agreed to give him the necklace as a final payoff. At their meeting, Taylor demanded cash. His victim threatened him with arrest, and he administered the chloroform.
Taylor was tried and found guilty of first-degree murder and was sentenced to a life term in the state penitentiary. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Frazier. Heard tonight were Herb Ellis, Vic Perrin, Gil Stratton, Jack Crucian. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Each Thursday night, it's Counter Spy on NBC.
And that is Dragnet from June 5th, 1952, with The Big Whiff, starring Jack Webb, is heard on NBC.